The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes, you are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
When I was in the evangelical world, we had a lot of Bible studies. Bunches and bunches of Bible studies. On any given Sunday, you know, six, seven of them gone. One of the recurrent questions in our Bible study was, why do people get so upset at us Christians? One of the recurrent answers was, well, down deep, they're probably convicted. Morally, they know we're correct. The fact that they're not living that way is probably something that unsettles them, and so they turn their upset toward us. And I remember thinking, well, perhaps, for some minority of folks, that could be the reaction. But I wondered, maybe they react that way toward us because in our supposed holiness, we act like a jerk. You know, am I holy or am I a jerk? That's the answer to that whole thing, because somebody can get pretty upset at you when you're holier than thou. And we have a model for that. Who was our Lord most upset at? The holier-than-thou religious people. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is the Monday version of The Doctor Is In, E-Person Monday, where we do what we can. Notice how I include you in that? We. Okay, I do what I can to work my way through this stack of E-Persons and get to some of your... you know, on the TV show, our executive producer says, we want to hear from you. So go to drray.com and give us your contacts. And so as a result, we get many that way. I do what I can here to move through them. However, one of the problems you run into is that some of them are very, very long. And for, there's no way you can use them for a TV show. Obviously, you'd have to edit them down to three sentences. You got a little more leeway on the radio. And I'm looking at one right now. Let's see, 3, 6, 9, 12. It looks to be about 150 words. I'd say that's about optimum length because I get to speak to not only the question, but the lines that make up the question. I get to read between the lines, offer thoughts. So I will get to that shortly. So what is my monologue today? I wrote it down. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Probably the number one referral, the number one reason people walk into my office. It used to be, oh, marital, maybe some depression, anxiety, a lot of kid problems. Those are still there. But rocketing toward the top, and I've noticed this about the last 10, 15 years, has been parents whose children are now raised, various levels of young adulthood, anywhere between 18 and 45, and are either difficult, have written the parents off, will not allow them to see the grandchildren, serious in-law problems. In other words, the parents are coming in for help to deal with these adult children who are hostile toward them, who keep distance from them, who want no part of them, who have left the church and are hostile toward the church. All kinds of very ugly reasons. obviously, when people describe to me the situation, I am aware that this is their perspective. This is how they see it. This is how they're interpreting everything. I would suspect that if the adult children came in, I would hear the reasons why they've created distance. However, what I have noticed is that a lot of these adult children are grown-up spoiled brats. They're not grateful to their parents for the life the parents have given them. In all their humanness, they attempted to give them a loving family. They are intolerant of their parents. They want no part of their parents and the way their parents are. They just don't like them. Another thing they do that's very cruel, and I've had this brought to my attention many times, the parents will say, "We've asked and we've asked. Tell us. What have we done? What have we done wrong? Tell us. We'd like to correct it. What can we do differently?" And they get no answer. They get no response. That's mean. That is really mean. And that probably serves more than anything else to convince me that if there is difficulty, it definitely slants toward the young adult children's side. One of the things I have noticed, and I think this is a reflection of probably the population that seeks me out in the office. By and large, the parents, now grandparents, are religious people. They try to live their faith as best they can. Lots of times they're very devout in their practices. Daily Mass or sometimes during the week on to Mass. These are folks who try to live according to a good Christian moral code. One might think, well, you know, given your opening comments there, Dr. A, maybe these parents are coming across as holier than thou, and they've really put off their adult children. That is sometimes the case. And some of my core advice to these folks is, hey, back off. Back off. This is creating problems, especially with your in-laws who do not have the history with you that your son or daughter does. But I think there's another element at play. That is, I call it the old, I know how you think. For example, not unusually, a parent will say to me, my mistake in the beginning was that I pushed a little too hard on religion, on them baptizing their child or giving them opinions about moral issues, and that really made it bad. This did not work at all. It was getting worse and worse. So I've completely and totally backed off. I don't say a word about any kind of religious or moral matter. But still, there is that hostility, that distance, and that intolerable attitude toward the parent coming from the adult children. Why is this? It's the old, I know how you think. I see this a lot with in-laws. The in-law marries a son or daughter. The in-law knows that the parents raised the son or daughter in a religious household. The in-law knows that the parents are still very much religious. This is a lot to them. This means the world to them. The in-law then imputes to the parents, well, you're judgmental. Even if the parents say nothing, even if they don't give off vibes, nonverbal messages that we don't approve of the way you do things, even if they don't do any of that, even if they're pleasant and nice, the problem you run into is if the adult child, particularly the in-law, because they don't have the attachment, the history to the parents that their son or daughter does. Even if the parents don't say anything, the in-law, or perhaps the adult biological child, doesn't like the way he or she knows they look at things. Don't like it. They don't like the fact that they're raising their child a certain way. They don't like the fact that the child watches stuff. They don't like the fact that the 9-year-old already has a smartphone. They know, they extrapolate from what they do know about the parents to judgmentalness, even though the parents haven't made any judgmental comments. They just don't like the fact that they know these parents would do it differently. And that creates, sadly, a lot of the hostility, a lot of the distance, a lot of the I don't want to be around you, a lot of the old, well, you can come and visit, but only come for 2 days. It's there. There's no way around it, really, other than to be as pleasant, as civil as you're permitted to be in the context you're allowed to have. But short of that, you cannot surrender who you are. You cannot surrender your deepest held beliefs. You cannot necessarily applaud behavior that you think is categorically immoral or godless. You can't do that. So the fact that you don't do that implies that you are judging the state of that person's soul. It is a real rock and a hard place. Do what you can to be as pleasant and loving as you can, recognizing that if you're dealing with somebody insecure, they are prone to misinterpret your very deepest held beliefs. I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
There was no single event. It was more gradual. You know, eventually you just don't go one Sunday, and then you don't go two Sundays in a row. Then went through a divorce and ended up being a single parent. If I didn't have church or God, I would be back at that lonely stage, that trouble stage. Whenever you get anxious and worry about things, you just know that Jesus has it under control.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
I was talking to a guy trying to sell me insurance. I got to be thinking, that's not really very articulate, is it? I got to thinking, now here's a guy betting me that I'm going to live. And then I'm betting him I'm going to die. And I hope he wins. And I'm paying him for thinking like this. I don't know. I have to ponder that. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. The doctor is in the version Monday, e-person Monday. This is from Brian. How does one deal with a person born and raised Catholic, then in parentheses, supposedly, who constantly argues on any and all points of the teaching of the church. For instance, if I were to tell him that Father baptized two babies during Mass, he would argue by saying, in my day, that didn't happen, meaning no baptisms during Mass. Our former bishop encouraged baptism during Mass in order to make everyone feel like family. Or this person might say, I don't have to go to Mass on Sunday because Scripture says, go into your room, shut the door, and bring your petitions before God. Dr. Ray, I can bring out my catechism, but that seems to be little value for any and all arguments. Let me stop there for a second, Brian. You're right. Clearly, something else is at the very base of this person's disputatiousness. He's going to argue. On one hand, he doesn't think that the church is traditional enough as he defines it in his narrow world and in his lifetime. But on the other hand, he feels okay to disobey the church in a very central teaching like Mass on Sunday obligation. So he's not real consistent at all. Now the question that Brian says is, why does he constantly argue about church teaching? Well, I don't think it necessarily has anything to do with church teaching. I think it probably has to do with he wants to do it his way. This is so often the case. The name has been given many names. Cafeteria Catholics, Catholics in name only, lukewarm Catholics, all of that. But there is a tremendous amount of that out there. You know that. You've seen it. Which is, I'm Catholic, but I'll tell you what. That Catholic Church better think like me, better do it my way, because when it doesn't, I reserve the right to correct it. That seems to be what's going on here. I would probably have no more discussions with this guy. I would not in any way try to straighten him out. And he brings up a point like that. In my day, we didn't baptize. We didn't baptize during Mass. I'd just look. I probably would just look at him. I might say something like, oh, well. That's about it. Perhaps you feel it's your obligation to straighten out his thinking. But clearly you've said he does this on all points. Sometimes he probably argues just to argue. He may not believe what he says. There are people who do that, you know. You think they're arguing because they believe a certain way. They're arguing just to argue. The motive is not to tell you how to think. The motive is to dispute you, just for the heck of it. So, my suggestion on this is to extricate yourself from any of these kinds of dead-end discussions. I have to believe that even when you offer him reasoning, even when you tell him this is what the church has taught, and this is why the church teaches it, all you've done is bring up more fodder for arguments. Extricate. This is from, well, he asked me not to use his name. Okay. Dr. Ray, this is concerning your comments on a recent monologue. Sir, it's monologue. As well as your Catholic Answers appearance. I know what this was about. I was talking about my Thinking Like Jesus book. I understand that we're supposed to forgive 70 times 70 times, 7 times 70 times, or rather an infinite number of times, and to be basically unoffendable. Well, that's an ideal, my friend. Obviously, we all struggle with that personal inclination to be offended, and some of us much more easily than others. You can take offensiveness into prickliness. I wonder about that level of forgiveness, Dr. Ray, and being able to do that. Let's say someone slaps you with their hand. And they do it, say, once a month. And each time they say they're sorry.
You forgive them.
When does it become abuse? And when do you get to stay away from that person to be safe? Well, obviously, forgiveness doesn't mean you put your face there to get mistreated. The physical part of it's pretty easy. The church would never expect you to say, well, okay, he's punching me. Well, I'll forgive him. He said he was sorry. I'll forgive him. At some point, you say to yourself, maybe after the first punch, I don't know. You say to yourself, this is not a safe person to be around. But here's where we get to the crux of the e-person. Now let's say the person didn't hit you physically, but comes after you with a barrage of insults and hurtful comments. In a pattern. Every time this person says, I'm sorry. You forgive them. When does it become emotional abuse? And you need to get away from the person to be safe. Keep some semblance of self-esteem. Okay, well, first of all, my friend, your self-esteem doesn't depend at all upon what another person says to you. Obviously, many of us think that and may feel that way, but it doesn't. Realistically, my self-esteem, my value as a person does not depend upon a lack of insults from other people. If they want to insult me, the only thing I got to be concerned about is it true? My self-esteem comes from God. Infinitely valued because he says so. He goes on. Which is more hurtful, the slap in the face or the slap with the tongue? Well, obviously, the tongue can be more hurtful because you've tied your self-esteem into it. If somebody slaps you in the face, you feel the physical pain. If somebody insults you, you absorb that insult, and then your mind takes it from there and keeps reiterating the insult. You're getting slapped and slapped and slapped verbally in your own mind. Obviously, again, if someone is mean and nasty and spiteful and insulting towards you, and this isn't someone that you have to have close contact with, a boss, a spouse, a sibling, a parent, you don't have to indulge in that relationship. It's just something you might want to put some distance from. It doesn't mean you hate him. Doesn't mean you wish him ill. You pray for him, whatever. But you don't have to keep putting yourself there. So, it comes down to this, my friend. The power of insults, the power of hurtful comments, can be greatly enhanced or greatly reduced by our thinking about them. I deal with many people who believe someone in their life is very hurtful or very nasty. Much of the time, they have allowed that person's words to affect them.
Oh, Dr. Ray, come on! Words hurt!
Yes, they can. But how much they hurt is up to us. I may not want to hear something nasty somebody says about me, but if I ruin myself for the next 2 days about it, that's me. I'm doing that. I'm thinking all kinds of things. They have no right to say that. How could they say that about me? They should look at themselves. All of the things I tell myself about what they say gets to me. That, my friend, makes the difference. This is Dr. Ray. This is E-Person Monday.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God, but I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the president of some country or something. You might get a lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, you, I, live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have, and we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize His presence, and in proportion as we believe that He is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What composes a society? The Catholic Catechism says human beings need to live in society. It is there that we develop our potential. The Catechism defines a society as a group of persons bound together by a principle of unity that goes beyond each one of them. A society endures through time. We owe loyalty to the communities that we are part of which are defined by their purpose. All social institutions, however, ought to have the human person as its principle, subject, and end. The societies of family and of state are necessary to the nature of man. Other societies, such as voluntary associations and institutions, are encouraged for economic, cultural, athletic, and professional reasons. The Church warns against certain types of socialization wherein excessive intervention of the state threatens personal freedom and initiative. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Always remember, you are unique, just like everybody else. We share the common trait of uniqueness. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi, Monday through Friday. The doctor is in, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. This is E-Person Monday, where I was going to say tackle, but again, that's kind of rough. That's kind of loud. I should say address or share or emote with the emails that come in. Dr. A, I'm the more devoted Catholic member of my family. I try to live my life in the Lord, which has resulted in my struggling a bit more than they due to my choices and values. Now, hold on a second here, Susan. Yes, you are struggling a bit more than they in the sense of probably how they react to you. But if God is the author of all things, then He knows how best to live. And the closer you get to the way He says to live, the better your life will be. Not necessarily pleasant better, but contentedly better or wholly better. And others who ignore the Lord may look like they're quite content and happy, but again, if God exists, and if He says do it this way and not that way, to the degree that you ignore Him, you're asking for trouble. I homeschool. I try to help bring in income, but I've spent more time volunteering for the church and teaching my children. My family, who sees me only once every few years, has decided that my struggles are all of my own making because I am bipolar, which I am not. Now, stop there for a second. Bipolar is heavily layperson overdiagnosed. It's also professionally overdiagnosed, too. There's research that indicates a lot of the times what is called bipolar is not bipolar. It is just a person who is emotionally all over the map or easily discontent or struggling with aspects of life. Their value, meaning her family, is happiness,
Well, that's the irony with happiness. You chase it, and you chase it in the wrong way, you're not going to find it. If it is your goal, if your goal is happiness, you run some risks. If your goal is a contented moral life, more likely happiness will follow. It's a byproduct. My family thinks I should have divorced my husband and sent my children to public school. Apparently, my denial that I am bipolar is the chief symptom of having the disease in their view. Well, they're wrong about that, too. It's not the chief symptom of bipolar, denying you're bipolar. That may happen with some people who are diagnosed bipolar, but that's not the symptom. But you see the catch-22 there, Susan. Because you deny it, you got it. How do you win that one? I tried to appease them by visiting a psychologist for a diagnosis. But apparently, I duped the psychologist. Oh, we're easy to dupe. Into giving me a clean bill of health. Read a bit of sarcasm in that last statement, she says. This interference from my extended family has led to a breakdown in a relationship between me and two of my own adult children, my mother, and, of course, those who perpetuated the problem. My identity as a member of a formerly close family, as a Christian, as a mother, has been shattered. And when lumped on top of the other things I'm dealing with in helping my husband and raising my youngest, the stress is taking a toll. Is it not common knowledge that a layman is in no position to understand the complexities of personality, lifestyle, family dynamic, and mental illness, and can actually do more harm than good by diagnosing a family member who has not even asked for help? Of course, Susan, that happens all the time. They head for the internet. They have their own opinions. You're not doing it the way they would do it. Therefore, you are disordered. Oh, my gosh. We are a hyper-diagnosing culture, and the only people who now diagnose more than the professionals are lay people. I'm surprised you haven't had narcissistic thrown at you, because that's a big one, too. I'm very extroverted, and I'm in tremendous emotional pain over this. Susan, you have one worry. Did you do your best, by God's grace, to live as well as you could? That's your one concern. Dr. Ray, I failed so many times. That's not the question, Susan. The question is, by God's grace, in your humanness, did you live as you thought was best? Yes, I did. Okay. But Dr. Ray, two of my adult children are estranged from me. That's not uncommon anymore these days. It's not uncommon at all. And if you have a family group that says your mother is a nutcase because she's religious or because she homeschools or because she won't divorce this wretched husband of hers who is our in-law, then something's wrong with a woman. Dr. Ray, I've had my struggles. I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that at all. But struggles do not mean you were automatically a bad mom, a bad Christian, a bad spouse. I don't mean that at all. I do know this. A lot of families nowadays look at the person in their family who loves the Lord and tries to live the faith. They're not admired for that. They are viewed as a cultural oddball. Now, you can be a cultural oddball. You can be nasty and a jerk and holier than thou. You can do those things. But if you're not doing those things, if you're just trying to live your faith in a humble, low-profile, kind, charitable way, and because you have moral standards, or because you homeschool, or because you go to church, or because you stay married in a very difficult marriage, you do these things that they don't agree with and that much of the culture backs them up, you will be a target. Our Lord said, they persecuted me, they will persecute you. Blessed are you when they utter all kinds of slander and calumny against you for my name's sake. Rejoice, be glad. Your reward will be great in heaven. Susan, it is time to let it go and ask for God's peace.
Stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
a
priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to wreck?
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is he your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, hey, when are you going to come to my man cave? Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. Well, you should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, he says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When was the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Christ is the wisdom of God, and so we try to develop the mind of Christ, whether we're looking at the bioethics of gene editing, immigration in the United States, abortion at the Supreme Court, or movies in Hollywood. So join me as we look at the news of the world through the lens of Scripture and the teaching of the Catholic Church.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta, this afternoon, 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Dr. Ray Guarini here, and the doctor is in. Absolutely no new age stuff. Pretty much mostly middle age. Well, now as I look at it, post-middle age. Middle age is receding in the rearview mirror rather rapidly. That's one of the, you know, that's one of the few things I can really do fast at this age, is to watch the younger years recede. That's happening pretty fast. This is E-Person Monday on The Doctor is In. This is where I do my very best to at least address a percentage of the emails I get. Now, some of them say, don't do this on the air. Don't address this on the air. Now, the problem with that is when you get hundreds of emails a month, you cannot sit at a computer and type out answers, first of all, because there are way, way, way too many questions and variables that you would ask. Sometimes I ask folks to call the show. A small percentage do. I do address as many of them as I can. Dr. Ray, what should a mother do? By the way, let me stop there for a second. When I was in grad school and I was learning the various therapies, there was a therapy called rational emotive therapy by a guy named Albert Ellis. It was the forerunner, the granddaddy of something called cognitive behavioral therapy, which is right now very, very popular. It may be the dominant therapeutic approach among most counselors and psychologists. And Ellis said, you don't use the word should. And his thinking was, That's a moral judgment. When you say somebody should do something, you're imposing your morals upon them. Well, obviously, that's Ellis's perspective. He was an atheist. So for him, I don't know exactly how he decided what is moral and what isn't, what is right and what is wrong. I'm sure he had his ways. Now, on this question from Judy, the should means what can I do? I think that's what she's asking. What can a mother do with a 40-year-old son who came back home 10 years ago having suffered a severe traumatic brain injury and has now been in and out of drug and alcohol rehab many times and is constantly wearing me out asking for money, which I don't have? He is on disability for mental issues. Okay. Now, before going any further than this, as I read this, Judy, when you first sent it to me, I did not read any further, but my thoughts were beginning to coalesce. And one of them was, okay, this is a situation ripe for maternal guilt. I don't know how serious the brain injury was. I don't know how much he's recovered. I don't know why he got SSI, which is what he probably got. And it's probably the tune of about $1,000 a month. I don't know any of this. Let me go on here. At 74 years old, I feel like all my energy has been completely sucked out of me. I pray constantly, but this problem isn't getting better. Let me stop there again, Judy. If you're praying for your son to alter his conduct, I don't know how likely that is. The Lord doesn't interfere with people's free will, however much they might have left of it after a brain injury or drug and alcohol abuse. Only he knows that. It may be that your son is incapable of altering his behavior to any significant degree. I don't know. Okay, you know that. But I think here comes the crux. I've threatened him with the police. Okay, what did you threaten him? Is he getting violent? Is he busting up your house? Is he refusing to leave? She says, I've threatened him with the police, but should I have him legally thrown out? I don't know, Judy. Should you? You see, this is your decision. You very much have the right to make this decision. But again, my spidey senses kicked in the first paragraph. He's never been physically abusive, but he has slammed doors, which scares me. Here you go. I feel guilty even thinking about throwing him out when he has nowhere to go. Okay. There's two levels of questions here. One is, how do I get him to act differently? That's an easy answer. You probably don't. Been with you 10 years. Whatever you've done, whatever you've tried, however many times you've tried it, he is still acting the way he's always acted, maybe worse. He badgers you for money. He's on Social Security. He's living with you, probably rent-free. So what's he spending his money on? And how long have you been giving him money? It would seem to me, Judy, that if you feel guilty about even thinking of throwing him out, then you probably feel guilty when he asks for money and you don't give it to him, so which means you probably do give it to him some of the time. Now, the second level of the question. Do you have the right to ask him to leave? Well, of course you do. Dr. Ray, where would he go? Well, there are all kinds of programs available. There are shelters, emergency shelters, until the social workers there find him someplace to live. If he's on SSI for mental illness, group homes are a possibility. If you're worried about where he would go, you contact your local mental health services, or if there's a developmental disability. Now, I don't know about that. I don't know exactly how they would determine that in your state, because it's not a developmental problem, but the brain damage happened in adulthood. Depending upon his level of brain damage, he would be eligible for all kinds of services. You need to talk to a local social worker in one of the facilities. If you know nothing else, call your local mental health center. They'll give you guidance upon who to contact. You can call your Department of Developmental Disabilities. You can call NAMI, National Association of Mental Illness. There are all kinds of places you can call to find a social worker who will give you all kinds of guidance. Job and Family Services. They can find a place for your son. He is eligible, I am sure, for housing, some type of housing, be it a group home, be it housing. For example, here in Ohio, my daughter, with her disability, there is something called ICAN, which is a two-year program of independent housing that somebody looks in on them every day. There's that. She was in group homes. Okay, currently, she is living independently on her Social Security. So you have many, many options, Judy. He is not necessarily bound to your house. Of course. And if nothing else, he goes to a homeless shelter. They have caseworkers who will then look to find him placement of some type. There is government housing, which he may be eligible for and may be able to afford. Those are all options for you, if you so choose. But, like so many in your situation, the number one stonewall is guilt. I'm Dr. Ray.
Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray. Oh, Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray. Dr. Ray.
The EWTN home video highlight for May is the story of Father John Sullivan. A Protestant born into a life of privilege, he left everything to follow God's call to become a Catholic priest and serve the poor and afflicted. And the faithful were blessed with countless miracles. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Or call 1-800-854-6316.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Abortion.
Pornography.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Do you invest in companies that are engaged in these practices? The Ave Maria Mutual Funds do not, and their investment portfolios reflect that. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Now, on the Ave Maria Radio app, the prayer section, where you can listen to the Holy Rosary. All four mysteries are voiced by Christ as the Answer and Father Knows Best host, Father John Ricardo. Are you struggling to remember specific prayers for pre- and post-confession, reciting the Stations of the Cross, or prayers during Eucharistic Adoration? It's all there, word for word, and within a few clicks under the prayer section on the Ave Maria Radio app. Download it on your smart device today.
Ray Guarendi here of The Doctor Is In. A little bit of an intellectual cheetah in short bursts, getting your IQ up to 120. Can hold it there for a couple of sentences. It's kind of like parallel to what cheetahs can do. They can get up to around 60, 70 miles an hour in about a couple hundred yards. So they better catch up to what they're catching up to. And that's what we'll try to do here. Catch up to what we're catching up to on this E-Person Monday very quickly before the show runs out. This is from Linda. We have told our 24-year-old son to move out. Why? After he spent most of Mother's Day with his girlfriend's mother. All right, now, Linda, be careful here. Be careful. I smell that you are taking it personal. Unacceptable to me, she says. He sent me a beautiful, expensive bouquet of flowers. I think that was just to pacify me. I threw them in the garbage. He spit in our faces. Oh, Linda, now I don't know if I go that far. All right. I don't know what kind of difficulty you've had with this young man. If you've had none, and this is just something where he spent most of the time with his girlfriend's mother, might not have as much to do with you as it does with his girlfriend. I don't know what she was asking, what she was demanding. I don't know how he felt that he had to accommodate her. I don't know. But you reacted strongly to this. There's no question. He spit in our faces. I threw the flowers out. You're really reacting strongly to this. He's moving on Saturday. Moving out, apparently. Okay. Now you said we've. I'm assuming you and your husband. Okay. And he hasn't spoken to us since. My husband doesn't want him to move out. That's the problem. My husband and I don't agree on how to discipline our son. Well, how long have you not agreed? If you haven't agreed for years, then my guess would be that in his early 20s, he's probably still difficult for you. My guess would also be that maybe your husband doesn't like the way you discipline him or how you interact with him. He thinks you nag too much or you get on him too much. I don't know, but that seems to be a common disagreement. You said we've told him to move out, so apparently your husband agrees. As far as he's concerned, your son can leave? Okay. I don't know how long it'll be before your son talks to you again. I don't know if him going to his girlfriend's mother's for Mother's Day is any reflection on the fact that there's been problems up to this point for years. I don't know that. I don't know how much your husband thinks that you're a problem in handling him. I don't know how much your husband feels guilty, like our previous E person, which is we can't ask him to leave. He hasn't done anything wrong. He's our son. Where's he going to go? What's he going to do? I don't know. Is he moving in with his girlfriend and her parents? What little I know, I would suggest this. Do not allow the fact that on Mother's Day, he went there instead of spending time at your place. Don't do that. You may have wanted him to come around you. You may have interpreted that as a sign of respect. He owes me that respect. I don't know what his motive was, and you probably don't know what his motive was either. At this point, don't allow this to become a fracture in your relationship. My guess would be that he'll talk to his dad, but he won't talk to you for a while. That'd be my guess. I can't know. So, I know you're thinking, oh, Dr. Ray, I can't believe he did this. Well, I can. Of course. I've seen all kinds of guys do things to their own family because they feel a loyalty to their girlfriend. That's not surprising. He did try to make it up. That was his way. You know, we guys do that. I'll send you flowers because of something I did wrong. But don't allow this to create a rift that doesn't heal for a long, long time. You'll only lose. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I appreciate it so very, very much. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. The program tomorrow will commence with you and I talking together, although I might do most of the talking. I don't know. It depends. I appreciate it. Walk with God. Hold your kids tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.